Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
That's right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. Kevin disappointed again today when they announced that Tom Glavine, Greg Maddux, and Frank Thomas made the Hall of Fame, but no Jerome Bettis.
His term is coming here in the next couple of weeks.
Not going to get there.
Thank you very much for destroying all hope.
He's not going to get there. Here's the problem Jerome Bettis is going to have. The problem Jerome Bettis is going to have is that the longer this goes, the more other candidates get into the mix.
Absolutely right.
There's the problem. You can camp it out. Now, I hope he gets into the Hall of Fame because then you would go to the Hall of Fame weekend.
Yes, I will absolutely go to the Hall of Fame weekend. I made that promise to my son.
Yes. And
who, by the way, is a bigger Jerome Bettis fan than me.
Which would get you out of the studio.
I mean, there you go. I knew there was something. I knew there was an ulterior motive there for you.
I'm just trying to make the audience happy. Lawrence literally builds you up all morning.
Build me a buttercup.
I'm taking Lawrence to lunch. By the time that's done, that problem will be all straightened out.
Yay, yay.
Boy, that sounded weak. Josh Boyer joins us from ESPN.com, wrote a very thoughtful article on pros and cons of some of the names that have been thrown out there for this Penn State head football coaching job. Josh, welcome. Great to have you with us. And let's start with the guy that Donnie Collins talked about last half hour, and Mike Munchak. What are some of the pros and cons there, Josh?
I think when you talk about Mike Munchak, the number one thing you have to talk about is loyalty. Penn State's in need of stability. And Munchak brings that in droves. I mean, he's been with one team basically since 1983. You know, he played for the Houston Oilers, then he coached for them, you know, even when they became the Tennessee Titans. So he brings lots and lots of stability. He's a former NFL head coach. That definitely means something to recruits. But obviously, the thing he lacks, the big negative there, is he has no college experience. I mean, the only college experience he really has is when he was a player here at Penn State. So that's a pretty steep learning curve. I mean, Bill O'Brien had experience in the college game. He was never a head coach. And he said it took him, almost a full year, you know, to be able to fine-tune things and realize what he had to do. So I kind of see the same thing with Munchak. There's going to be that transition period there. He won't be able to hit the ground running, so to speak.
And whom he puts on his staff would be absolutely critical. Correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, he puts the right offensive coordinator, the right quarterbacks coach. I mean, you know, he'll be able to, maybe bring some of his NFL staff. Having one or two guys from there would be huge. And I believe one wide receivers coach who might be in play is Sean Jefferson, whose son, Dan Jefferson, was already offered by Penn State. So maybe the lure of maybe coaching his son, at Penn State, maybe that could obviously do something to bringing him here. But obviously he has great contacts, in the Penn State community and in the NFL community, that if he was brought here, I think the other pro with him would be, like you kind of hinted at, he would be able to put together that strong staff. But as far as being a kind of the manager himself, you know, that's going to take some learning.
James Franklin of Vanderbilt has been a name that's been tossed out there.
Yeah, well, in my opinion, Steve, I think he's the best man for the job at this point. But if we're talking pros and cons with Franklin, I think, it's just kind of, what he's been able to do at Vanderbilt is absolutely incredible. And, I just talked about this, but before he came to Vanderbilt, the last time the Commodores had a 9-win season was 1915, which, you know, was a full decade before Joe Paterno was born. You know, so Vanderbilt was a doormat for a long time. Well, the last 2 years, it won nine games back-to-back, which has obviously never happened before in Vanderbilt history. You know, I've talked to some high school coaches, some recruits, and they just rave about him. One ACC coach told Bruce Feldman from CBS that he would just kill it, you know, if he was at Penn State recruiting. I mean, it would just be probably something Bill O'Brien could even have hoped for. But as far as cons, it's almost that he's too hot of a commodity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, here's a guy who interviewed with the Houston Texans, has interviews with Cleveland and Washington, and you just don't know if he's going to stay at Penn State. Is it going to be another 2 years and he's gone thing? And in addition to that, you also have the Vanderbilt rape case, which still kind of hangs above his head a little bit, and you have to wonder if Penn State is willing to take a potential hit to its image again.
Right, and there's the ability, but he also has the other part, though, the ability that at a place like Penn State, you know, even if the money's comparable, to win and win big, because when you're in the SEC, and it is Vanderbilt, now, your division is Georgia, Florida, Missouri, South Carolina, then you get Tennessee, and you get Kentucky. I mean, it's an uphill climb if he stays at Vanderbilt.
Oh, absolutely, and I think that the main thing I believe that separates Penn State and Vanderbilt, because, again, Vanderbilt has the money.
Right, you know,
they can
private school.
With pretty much anyone in the country as far as the money is concerned. They have huge endowments, lots of wealthy alumni. But, I mean, I really do think Franklin would almost have an easier time at Penn State. I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, the competition is certainly tough, but also the academic standards. Penn State's a great school, but I want to say Vanderbilt's admittance rate is somewhere between 12 and 17%. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very difficult school to get into. And, you know, as a result, you know, you have to kind of lay off some commits that you wouldn't otherwise. I mean, you come to Penn State in this, you know, again, fertile recruiting territory. Pennsylvania is certainly better than Tennessee. I mean, this guy already has, you know, recruiting nets in California and Florida and Georgia, you know, places that Ted Roof, while he was here, was really trying to sink his teeth into. So, I mean, I think he absolutely has more to gain at Penn State. And fans, you know, that's another thing. You look at Vanderbilt's attendance, you know, they might have 75% capacity, you know, on most days, even when they're having this untold success.
Right.
Penn State, you know, as you know, that's a whole other story.
Okay, now, a guy that is certainly the Penn State fans just think so highly of is Larry Johnson. He brings a lot of pluses to the table, but he also brings, obviously, a hurdle to the table.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to bring someone who wants to stay as long as possible, I mean, you bring Larry Johnson. I mean,
right.
You know, I think he would stay as long as the school would have him. I mean, you know, there's a guy who was offered the Illinois defensive coordinator position a few years ago. Would have doubled his salary, and he stayed. And mm-hmm. then you had his name being tossed in the ring to be Maryland's defensive coordinator. And the reason that he stayed, according to the Patriot News at the time, was he promised the incoming commits that he would be there to coach him. So, I mean, he's obviously got that loyalty. He's got that trustworthiness. And, you know, talking to recruits who weren't even recruited by Larry Johnson, commits who weren't recruited by Larry Johnson, you know, they're talking to him now, and they say he's a huge reason for why they've stayed there. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find one player who's had him who didn't like him. So he's kind of the player favorite. But again, I mean, he might be the favorite by the players, but he's never been anything other than a position coach. I mean, he's almost in the same exact position as Mike Munchak, except he doesn't have those NFL connections, and he doesn't kind of have the potential to bring in a great staff that Munchak has. So I can't see Larry Johnson really being seriously considered. I almost see him as kind of the safety net of the search committee, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, he had, what, four games as a co-coordinator with Ron Vanderlinden in 2011 when Tom Bradley was the interim head coach.
Yeah, excuse me, I meant no permanent
right.
position.
Yeah, no, I only threw that in, Josh, just as a factual caveat, just as an addendum, no big deal. You know, that way everybody goes, hey, wait a minute. That way I just want to make sure everybody knew that you and I knew. Okay.
I got you.
Al Golden of Miami, certainly a name that was mentioned a lot early. He's had a press conference already this week discussing the situation, but still, let's just throw him out there because every name's out there.
Yeah, you're not kidding. It's hard to pretty much dismiss anyone at this point. But, I mean, again, it's kind of interesting because you can definitely see a pattern. I mean, you know, all the guys we mentioned, with the exception of Franklin, have Penn State ties. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I talked to a former alum, someone who played with Al Goldman. He thought he was just basically kind of Joe Paterno when Paterno was in his 40s. Because, I mean, you look at side-by-side photos of these guys, and this alum thought it was very intentional. But, you know, you have the rolled-up khakis, the black belt, the tucked-in shirt, you know, the tie. You know, he kind of comes from the Joe Paterno, you know, school of coaching. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of guys, that means something to, you know, a lot of Penn State fans. So, I mean, he's taken a dumpster fire of a Temple team, made them respectable. You know, Miami, he took them through a difficult time. But the con with them, Steve, or with him rather, is his inability to win the big game. I mean, it's kind of how Penn State was in the, middle 2000s, you know, with making the Alamo Bowl and those kind of bowls every year. Mm-hmm. He's never had a single season where he's had a winning record against teams that finished above 500. Even this year, his best season, 9-4, he went 3-4 against teams with winning records, 0-4 against teams who had more than 7 wins. So that's been the big knock on him, not to mention his defensive coordinator, which has taken a lot of heat lately.
Yeah, Mark D'Onofrio, another former Nittany Lion linebacker, played a great game, by the way, against Notre Dame when they knocked off the number one Notre Dame. So, I mean, but each one of these guys, and I'm going to throw in one more name here in a moment, each one of these guys along the way, whether they have Penn State ties or not, each one's become their own man. So I think that's the part where they all have a body of work that allows them to be their own man when they, if they were to assume a job like this.
I mean, it would be difficult to disagree with that. I mean, they've all been on their own for a long time. I mean, any guy you pick there, you know, you're talking about someone who's had, you know, a plethora of experience, you know, really through the ranks of colleges and the NFL, with the exception of Larry Johnson, who's been at Penn State, though, since 1996. You know, so yeah. I feel like no guy is the perfect hire. I mean, everybody has his pros. Everybody has
sure.
his cons. And obviously, I mean, it's just kind of the selection committee's duty to juggle those and, you know, figure out, you know, what weighs more than the other.
Then there's a name that surfaced a couple of years ago and has surfaced again. That's Greg Roman, the 49ers offensive coordinator. Jersey ties, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, he's an interesting guy. You know, he certainly has more NFL experience than college experience. He was only coordinator of Stanford, I think, for
2 years.
For two seasons.
Yeah,
and, you know, he's a bit of a wild card, in my opinion, because you talk to 49ers fans and some people who cover the 49ers, and they're not sure if San Francisco's offense, you know, it looks okay this year, but a lot of people think they're succeeding in spite of Roman instead of because of Roman.
Mm-hmm.
That, and again, he has limited college experience as well. So, I mean, I think he's really a wild card in this race. I certainly don't think he's a bad candidate, but he's not a proven one either.
How important, in the end, when you're choosing among quality candidates, and each one you brought up is a quality candidate, whether or not these names are even on the table for the search committee, I don't know. But
I don't think anyone does.
Yeah, nobody does. But you know, but say they're all quality candidates. How important then does fit become?
How important does what become?
Fit. You know, you sit down, you talk to them, your personality meshes with their personality. You know what? I think they'll fit with the athletic department. They'd fit with what we want to do. Fit.
Oh, fit. I'm sorry, Steve. You know, I thought you said hit. I'm thinking of the old strength trainer.
No. Right. That's okay.
I mean, I still think, I mean, you talked about being your own man before. And, you know, by fit, that's why I think someone like a Greg Schiano you know, wouldn't mesh well at Penn State or Nick Saban or someone like that. But I really see these guys, and I don't think anyone kind of goes against that Penn State culture. I mean, all of these guys we talked about, with the exception of Roman and Franklin, have those Penn State ties. So, I mean, that fit's already there, you know, and I've talked to enough people around Franklin where, I mean, they basically all say he's a guy who will go out and do the fundraiser stuff. He'll talk to the media at any time he can. I mean, he's not just a coach. He knows he's an ambassador.
Right.
You know, so I think Franklin would fit in, you know, very well at Penn State in that role. Greg Broman, I don't know as much about, but you know, obviously he was pretty good at Stanford, and you know, he's from the Northeast, and I think he would be able to do that as well. So it's important, but I don't think any guy is discounted here because he doesn't fit. I think they all do, to be honest.
Fun part about Greg Roman is that when he was out of college and pro football for 1 year, he was the offensive coordinator at his alma mater, Holy Spirit High. I thought that hey, that's kind of neat. That's kind of neat he did that. So
yeah, I don't know how many people go from the Baltimore Ravens to Holy Spirit High School to Stanford. That's a pretty interesting lineage there.
Yes, it is. Josh, thanks a lot for the time. It was a very thoughtful and well thought out article, and we appreciate the time you gave us.
Right. Well, thanks a lot, Steve. Appreciate it.
That's Josh Moyer, ESPN.com. Our thoughts in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
January 2014 will be known as the best month Sunbury Motors Hyundai ever had. For the first time ever, Sunbury Motors Hyundai is overstocked with 110 brand new Hyundais. We need to liquidate half of $2.5 million of inventory now. How would you like to buy an $18,400 new Hyundai Elantra for under $16,000? Or $248 per month with tax and tags down? Or a Hyundai Accent for only $14,500? Two brand new Hyundais that come with a America's best 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty for under $16,000 is unheard of. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is serious about liquidating half of $2.5 million in new Hyundai inventory now. Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
And at sunburymotors.com.
Hurry in and see why January 2014 will be known as the best month Sunbury Motors Hyundai ever had.
Movie Ed TV, they played this theme as he was running out the building.
Yes, that was a good movie. This is a great song.
Ed TV was, I thought, a lot of fun to watch. Reality TV, from Ron Howard's point of view. All right, let's get to it here. We've talked about various candidates. I know some people have looked at the Louisville situation where Bobby Petrino looks like he's going to be hired there. Remember, he coached at Louisville. He coached for this athletic director, Tom Jurich, who is universally respected by everybody. They already know what they're getting in him. Penn State has gone through its search committee. They had a lot of people apply for this job. I think that what they've done is they've gone through and they have thoughtfully interviewed people along the way and not just jumped at the first person. Okay, great, we're all set. No. I think they wanted to go through the process and see exactly how everybody fit into the process and then make a selection and then find out if they want the job. And, you know, everyone's talked about, you know, Dave Joyner said a matter of days, not weeks. This is not going to drag on 2 weeks. All right, this is, okay, we hit day 7 today. I still maintain by the weekend we will know who it is. I think there's just been a process that has gone on in this situation where they didn't just jump at the first thing or the second thing, whatever. I think they had a list of candidates after going through a stack of individuals that really wanted this job, and I think what they've done is they've gone through and they've tried to pick out 4, 5, whatever, and said, look, okay, let's interview these people. Let's get a feel. Fit is going to be important here. You can't do that unless you go through the sit-down process and evaluate everybody in front of you. What Tom Jurich did with Louisville, they were talking about a known entity that already has worked for him and worked within their athletic department. They already know what the fit is like. Here you're talking about there is a get-to-know-you process. You know,
I probably know Al Golden, for example, better than the people on the search committee only because I've been around Al longer. Mike Munchak, I haven't been around him in 30 years, right? Don't know James Franklin at all. Don't know Greg Roman at all. Of course, Larry Johnson I've known forever. So some people I do know and some people I don't know. I'd need more time to get to know some of the other people. My guess is the people on the committee don't know any of these candidates. And so it's a, you know, let's you know, what's your philosophy on this? You know, how do you feel about academics? What's the goal set going to be there? What's the goal set going to be in terms of the kind of offense and defense you want to run? How do you want to put a staff together? How do you feel about the one team concept? There's a lot of things that they need to answer along the way, in which in the end, Dave and the committee then get a feel for and say, you know what, in the end, that really is the person we want to offer for this job. The job is that important that if a little time was needed and more candidates were looked into just to make sure they picked out what they perceived to be the right one, okay? I liken this to having a car. Suddenly your car breaks down. You bring the car into the shop. Okay, it's the only car you have. So now you're unsettled. How do I get to work? How do I get to the store? Then you find out, you know what? They can't fix the car. I'm going to have to buy a new car. Okay. So now you go out through the process of going through all the great dealerships like Sunbury Motors, and you end up then buying the car. And the second you buy the car and you drive off the lot, everything is settled. Suddenly you personally feel 1,000 times better, don't you? Like everything's back to normal. That's what happens in this search.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hola and buenos dias, our bilingual audience.
I have enough trouble with English, so I stick with that.
We'll debate that later in the show. You regret speaking, don't you?
Sometimes I do.
Well, I'm on Lawrence's show yesterday. And, of course, Lawrence is talking about how they build your self-esteem up. And,
You're
of course...
fascinated by that.
I am fascinated by it. I'm thinking... So I'm going to take Lawrence to lunch. And I think just after, I mean, I don't know, 3 to 5 minutes, Kevin Hur hotline. There we go.
It's one of my fans calling right now to complain.
I think after 3 to 5 minutes, I think the tone on the mark's going to change. You just can wake up every day and just feel the heat. You're not feeling good, are you?
I'm feeling great. I got a game tonight. I'm good to go. It's a 24-hour postponement.
Of course it is. All right.
I'm on the .com tonight. I'm excited.
We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. And we've talked about... there's a wide variety of things to talk about in this half hour. It's 800-795-9565. So let's talk about what you want to talk about. 800-795-9565. That's 800-795-9565. I believe they've gone through the process, and I think they're right on target with the process. And now I think they're in the evaluation stage of the process as to which person they wish to offer, and then I think they go from there. I think by the weekend we know. I've maintained the entire time that we would know on Friday. Well, I think that's where I would not be surprised. That's where they are at this stage. I don't think the decision was okay. We got somebody. Let's go get them. And I think that they wanted to go through considering the great interest because they've had a lot of people. Through representatives or the coaches themselves that have said, look, we want to be considered. Well, I think then you go through all that and say, okay, who are we interested in? What name jumps out to us that we're interested in? And I think they've gone through and they've tried to identify those individuals and then interview them and be thorough with the interviews. I think now they're at the stage where it's selection time. And what has made it difficult for everybody, whether it is a reporter, a talk show host, and most especially a fan, is that everybody, of course, wants to know right now. We all want to know. Everybody wants the situation settled. The second they name a head coach, it's going to settle down immediately. Now, that head coach is going to have to hit the ground running. You need to get a strength and conditioning staff. You need to have your own personal staff in place. Need to meet with your players. Need to get on board and talk to the verbal commitments that Penn State has. And then you need to shore everything up for that first Wednesday in February, while now also looking ahead to what you're going to do in 15 and 16. This is where the current staff that is there now, that is, you know, even though Bill Kavanaugh has taken the head coaching job at Bentley, there are still other people on that staff downstairs at Lash Building that have a handle on who's recruited and why. You still have, you know, the video staff is still there, so you want to start looking maybe at tape of the guys that you're going to, that you have now inherited on this football team that are now your football players. But I believe that that we will know by, I wouldn't be surprised if we know Friday, we'll definitely know by the weekend. And that is the definition of days. Days, you know, weeks is, you know, you don't want this dragging beyond. Look, idealistically, you don't want anything to go past Sunday. You really would like to have a head coach in place so that when the players are all back on campus, you can meet with them and the winter program gets started. There's also another date that's very important. You must have this really in place by the 15th. Texas did not just arbitrarily pick January. You know, remember everybody with Mack Brown? We're going to have somebody by January 15th. What's so almighty important about January 15th? It's a Wednesday. That's because that's when the dead period ends of recruiting. That's why these dates are important. They've gone through now an extensive process. I think they've gone through the process of identifying who they wanted to talk to, and I believe they've now gone through and have talked to the people they want to talk to. Now I think it's decision time as to what direction they want to take it in and whether the person they've selected feels the exact same way that the committee does. Okay? So it's, you know, we're 7 days into this thing, and you know, it's not knowing, and people panic a bit, and I understand that. Like I said, I mentioned it's like the car, like your car, anything. Anytime you have a situation that's unsettled, you yourself don't calm down, and you're not settled until it is settled. Car breaks down, car goes in the shop. You don't have a car. You got to figure out what to do. Okay. And then they tell you, hey, look, we really can't fix this thing. Now you got to buy a new car. Now you go out to a place like Sunbury Motors, you try a few, and then you sit there and make a selection and go. And the second you drive out of that lot, you're like, oh, you feel like your life has settled down again. Well, that's what this is like. As Kevin said to me, yeah, until you get the first payment. And in this case, it's until you get your first loss. So, you know, so they've gone through the process. Respect. It's hard when you want to know right away to respect that there's a process going on, especially when there's no word on how the process is going. You know, there was a statement by Dave Joyner yesterday about it. So that was the update. Hey, look, it's been robust, and I think it's gone about the way they thought it would go. Okay, well now it's you get the sense that now's selection time. You know, week down, now it's probably selection time. And it's, you know, you're hoping that the person that you select feels the same way that you do about things and that it's the right fit. And then you can work out an agreement in principle with, obviously, a greater detailed contract to come up. Hall of Fame voting. Maddox, Lavin, Frank Thomas.
All first-year guys, by the way.
And it's the first time in, 50, 60 years? Three first-time guys have ever made it? I think it's the first time since... This is the highest volume of first-year guys since the original class. Cobb, Ruth, Honus, Wagner, and those guys. All of them deserve it. Frank Thomas, 500-plus home runs, and then he hit 521. He had a 301 career batting average.
feared hitter, no doubt about that, but also a guy that had a great swing. That's why he had that 301 career batting average. So you talk about 500 home runs and a 300 career batting average. That's pretty powerful combination. Glavine and Maddux were certainly two of the great pitchers of their era. Craig Biggio, I feel awful for. He missed by two votes. Two votes. That's hard. Now, I've been a big proponent of Curt Schilling and Jack Morris because I think they're money pitchers. But those are the three that made it today. Chris Wheeler and Gary Matthews. They both stay with the Phillies, but they're not going to be on the broadcast team any longer. Wheels did a marvelous job on the broadcast team for 30-plus years. Now, this is not a decision, just so you know, that was handed down and Wheels found out about it yesterday. Okay? This is actually something they've known about for a little bit. He's a friend. And I'm crushed for him, but at the same time, it's going to free him up to... Because I think Wheels is... Wheels is probably, what, 67? 68?
Yeah, I was going to say 67, because I think Matthews is 63.
Yeah. And...
68.
I said 68, yeah. And... You know, I'm crushed for him, but at the same time, I also know that he'll do a great job in the positions in. Because I always felt that what he did was he did a great job of talking about the Phillies' point of view, but he also made sure he always gave, quote, the other guy credit when they did something right.
I also liked that he didn't sugarcoat things.
Respect for the game. He has great respect for the game.
But if the Phillies were playing poorly, he would say they were playing poorly.
Right. Now, Tommy McCarthy, I believe, stays. And this doesn't change the radio team at all.
No, that's still going to be L.A.
Friends. And they're on, what, 107?
No.
Okay. I meant in Philadelphia. That's their flagship down there? What's their flagship down there?
You know, just like that, I can't tell you either.
I thought their flagship was an FM.
Yeah, I think it is, too. I think it's the big talker down there.
Okay. Maybe I was thinking like 93.7 or 97.7, something like that. I don't know what it is.
I think it's HP, HPFM on 94.1. I think.
So what they do is that they probably have input on that part of it. This is the TV side. This is Comcast's input, right? So Comcast is the one that, you know, they got the rights, and they probably had input as to what they want to do. Now, Tommy McCarthy stays. Now, I don't know what else they're doing with the other spots, though. But this is not something where he found out yesterday and it happened. He did know about it beforehand.
Actually, I think 1210 is officially the flagship station.
Okay, so the old WCAU. Okay.
PHT, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But that's the 50,000-watt boomer down there, whatever. So Wheels will continue to be a friend of the show, and we'll have him on and talk to him and so forth. But, that's big. Bettis is still not in the Hall of Fame.
For now.
No. What is your argument for him getting in?
What's that? What's my argument?
Yeah, what is
yards.
Your argument for...
Yards. Yards and carries. Listen, there are no running backs today like Jerome Bettis. There are no running backs that are the running back. It's running back by committee.
Well, Jamal Charles. I think Shady McCoy.
Yeah, but that's not on a team that runs the football, though. That's what I mean.
He gained 1,600 yards. Shady McCoy averaged over 100 yards a game this year.
I'm not downplaying him. I'm not. I'm just saying there are few running backs now, and I really think less than that even, a few. I'd say rarely do you see a running back now that is the premier running back. He's the one that's going to get the ball on a regular basis because a lot of these teams are throwing the football as much. I mean, here's a guy with 13,000 yards, averaging 4 yards a carry. Do the math. That's a first down every 2.5 times he rushes the football.
If he did that for the Oakland Raiders, would you be talking about him?
Would I be talking with if he was the Raider? Probably not. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm not.
That's exactly right.
I'm not going to say yet. I'm not going to say Lions. But here's a guy back in 97 that carried the ball 375 times for 1,600-plus yards, averaging 4.5 yards a carry. Hi, that's the definition of workhorse. And, oh, yeah, by the way, 3 years later, he carried the ball for just about the same average in 355 times.
How many yards he averaged per?
4 yards. He was averaging 4 yards a carry for his career.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. You take a guy with 4 yards for his career.
Excuse me. Gold standards 5. Okay. Jim Brown, Barry Sanders. You're talking 4.5 plus gold standard. 4 is not a gold standard. Okay. 4 is average.
I have Jack on the line for you. Wants to chat?
Of course you want to shift over to Jack. You're getting killed in this argument.
No, I'm sorry. You're not going to change my mind. I didn't even throw in receiving yards. Now, there weren't that many of them, but there were a few.
I only saw him catch one pass ever. It was against Penn State. He never should have caught it. Jack, how are you?
Hey, Steve. Nice to talk to you. How you doing?
You too, Jack. Great to hear from you.
Hey, quick, I'm changing gears a little bit. I want to ask you a question about Bill O'Brien.
Sure.
I heard a lot of chatter in the last week about, you know, that he's the, you know, the Paterno faction is what drove him out here, and I don't think that's true at all. But I want to get your opinion on it because you're obviously more closely tied into it than a lot of us are. What do you think the impact of that Sports Illustrated story last year was on? Because to be honest with you, I think that thing. Kind of was the tipping point for making Bill think that, hey, maybe I'm not long for here. You know, I think we all thought he was going to go to the NFL eventually, but I think that story may have kind of pushed it along a little bit. What are your thoughts?
That's a really, really good question, and I hadn't really thought about it because I know it bothered him because he had wanted to make some changes in a lot of areas. He took the first year and he evaluated every phase of the operation. Literally, he evaluated everything from travel and where they stay. So this year they changed airlines. This year, instead of staying at Top Trees, they stay at the Penn Stater. And he wanted to make some changes based on the NFL model he worked with as to how he wanted to handle the medical staff. And that's all he did along the way. Now, Jack.
No, I was going to say, unfortunately, that got spun into medical care at school at Penn State has declined since he took over, and I think that really rubbed him the wrong way. If you remember, like when he had a press conference after that, like kind of hastily put together, and you could tell he was livid at that press conference. And I remember at the time hearing that, saying, "Oof, this is enough pressure on him as it is without something like this rearing its ugly head."
Well, I know it bothered him because I texted him that morning, and then he called me within 5 minutes, and we talked. And I know that he was upset about it because he said, "I'm just trying to evaluate everything in front of me." And then he says, "Yeah, I even evaluated you." I said, "I survived." I said, "I survived, right?" He goes, started laughing. He goes, "Yeah, I think you did." All right, but he evaluated all phases of it. You know, that's why, for example, while that's a major change that people saw and was very public, there were subtle changes such as, okay, no longer Miami Air, now United Airlines. No longer Top Trees, now they're staying at the Penn Stater. You know, and there were things like that that, you know, he set up and made changes that he thought better suited how he wanted the program moving forward. Did it affect, in the end, how he felt? You know what? That's a great question, Jack. I can't answer it, but it certainly is an interesting theory that I hadn't thought of.
Yeah, I think this, because I'm hearing a lot of talk from people saying, oh, everybody was on his side. You know, he had people behind him 100%. Whoever leaked that story to SI had, right. You know, didn't have, well, I don't think had Penn State's best interest at heart when, right. when they sent that to this, because I don't think SI went hunting for that story. I think somebody presented it to SI.
Right.
That's just my two cents.
Right. And I'll say this, though. I thought the fan base was very much behind Bill O'Brien. Everywhere I went, I sensed they were very much behind him. And I know that some people talked about, well, gee, Ron Vanderlinden, that the quote Paterno people, faction, whatever, upset because, of course, he was one of Joe's coaches. And that's not what I heard from fans. I didn't hear the name Paterno when Ron was let go. I heard the names Lee, Bowman, Wake, Puzlesny, yeah. Connor, and Motti. People said, look at the great linebackers he developed, and I never heard anybody talk about him being one of Joe's former coaches.
Right, absolutely. And if you think about it, I mean, he wasn't like he was somebody there from like the 70s or 80s. He didn't, you know, he started in 2000, and, you know, I don't think anybody would look at him as being a long-time Paterno guy. He's been a Penn State coach who's been successful here, and why are you letting him go?
Exactly. People looked at the lineage of, look at all these linebackers in the NFL. They're all really excelling. I mean, Pro Bowl, you know, in the conversation as who's the best linebacker in the league. People talk about Bowman. They talk about Lee. They respect that Jacksonville, the Puzlesny, is probably the best player they have. Look at what Cameron Wake's done. I mean, that's what people were looking at and not who hired him.
Exactly. Yep.
Jack,
I'm totally with you.
We got to get to the top of the hour here, Jack, but that was a very thoughtful call and gave me something to think about.
All right. Nice talking to you, Steve. Take care.
You too, Jack. Thank you.
Yep. Bye.
All right. Basketball coming up, of course, at 6:30 tonight. We're on at 7. And, Kevin, you, of course, will be doing Shikellamy tonight as well on .com time.
Shikellamy Shimokin on WKOK.com, 7:15 airtime there.
All right. I'm telling you right now, I think they're at the point where they've interviewed everybody. I think that the time to find out who the football coach is very much upon us. And I'm going to say, I'll throw a dart. Like I said, I think we'll know by Friday. So it's, 24 to 36 hours? I think we'll know over the next 24 to 36 hours who it is. Just a guess, but I think there's a good chance that's going to happen because I think they put a lot of thought into the process. I think they've selected whom they want. And I think they want to make sure that they've got that button down now with whom they want. And because it's a process. And I think they've been very thoughtful about how they've gone about it and interviewed the people they've interviewed. And I think it's now selection time. They may not have made a selection yet, but I think right now they know that they're at selection time. How about that? All right. That wraps it up for today. Top of the hour news. Then at 5:05, Kevin will be taking your calls on Lindsey Vonn. No?
No. No. I got to go to Shimokin.
By the way, I do feel awful for her, though. I do, because when you only can do something once every 4 years, and all of a sudden that opportunity is taken away, and the clock is ticking in your life, can you make it to 2018? That's hard. Very, very hard.
I think she's young enough, but you're right. That knee injury and having another injury and another problem and then another problem, that makes it really hard.
Okay. That wraps it up for today. Talk to you tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.